Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, July 23rd, 2015. The U.S. Special Envoy for Sudan and South Sudan says IGAD Plus mediators are ready to hand over a compromised peace deal to South Sudanese negotiators.
The IGAD Plus are united in their determination to see that the compromise agreement is signed by August 17.
And women who fought in Sudan and South Sudan war are asking the government in Juba to look after them. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The expanded IGAD Plus mediation team for South Sudan has finished working on a compromise peace agreement for South Sudan. The agreement will be handed over tomorrow in Addis Ababa to negotiators for President Kiir's government, for Riek Machar's armed opposition movement, and representatives of a group of former political detainees. The mediators are not releasing details of the final agreement, but U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan, Donald Booth, says focus of the deal is on the makeup of a transitional government for South Sudan. Ambassador Booth spoke with South Sudan in Focus reporter Iskander Freo in Addis Ababa today and says that the IGAD Plus is determined that the warring parties will sign a deal by August 17 deadline.
When people look at the elements of power sharing, structure of a transitional government, they have to keep in mind that this is a transitional government which is to allow South Sudanese to decide how they want to move forward. And so it's not the permanent government. It's not perhaps the perfect government by any means. But it's a government that should be able to function the way it has been constructed in the draft peace agreement to enable South Sudanese to determine their own future, what type of government they want, what system of government they want, how they want their resources utilized, and how they want to deal with the scars and the wounds of the past. So all of that is in there, and I really urge the people of South Sudan to take a look at this agreement. It will be put up on the IGAD website after it is delivered to the parties tomorrow, and I would urge that the civil society leaders, religious leaders, those who are in a position to access it on the website, the media in South Sudan, will all look at that and begin to have that dialogue with the South Sudanese people about this. Because after all, this is a negotiation that is about trying to end the suffering of the people of South Sudan.
How optimistic are you that the agreement will be signed on August 17? Because we were, talking to opposition negotiators, and they were saying that this agreement, keeps the status quo.
Well, let me reiterate what is actually in the press statement that IGAD issued, and I'll just read it out loud. The IGAD Plus are united in their determination to see that the compromise agreement is signed by August 17. So we're united in our determination to do that. Whether the leaders of South Sudan, the leaders who will come to the negotiations, will achieve that is up to them. But we certainly urge them to take this opportunity to end this long era now of suffering of the people of South Sudan.
That was U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan, Donald Booth, speaking with Iskander Freo in Addis Ababa, where the IGAD Plus mediation team will tomorrow hand over a compromise peace deal to negotiators for the warring parties in South Sudan. Back in Juba, civil society activists are criticizing a proposed small arms control bill under consideration in parliament. At a workshop today organized by the South Sudan Action Network on Small Arms, a member of the South Sudan Law Society said the bill would fail to restrict the number of firearms a civilian can legally acquire. Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Today's meeting is one of several forums held in the capital since the Small Arms Control Bill was first initiated in 2013. Retired Brigadier General Christo Simon Fataki, who is Acting Director General of the Bureau for Community Security and Small Arms Control, says activists will make recommendations for improving the bill, including provisions that were removed from the original draft, such as regulating all firearms used by citizens as well as organized forces.
We feel that your role as a civil society is very important, especially during the public hearing. You must see to it that those provisions which are left out are incorporated in the bill so that we have a very comprehensive bill which addresses all the issues related to small arms.
Fataki says certain provisions, such as the one on regulating firearms of security forces, were removed when the bill reached the Ministry of Justice. He says that provision was rejected by the National Security and the SPLA, whose officials argued that SPLA Rules and Security Act already cover that aspect of regulating firearms.
In SPLA and police, yes, they have some aspects of regulating the weapons, but they do not contain the marking, registration, safe storage facilities, disposal and destruction, and also tracing and tracking of the weapon.
Civil society activist Amanya Joseph agrees with Fataki. He says the current bill does not adequately spell out how many guns a person can own.
The bill doesn't specify exactly as to how many numbers of ammunition or how many numbers of arms one can possess. And therefore, this actually reflects the difficulties that we shall have, because we, as South Sudanese, we believe that we should possess more than 4 or 5 arms. Just taking into situation that we came from a history whereby most of us do have a lot of guns.
Fataki says the bill was drafted as part of implementation of the transitional constitution of South Sudan, which calls on the government to regulate the licensing of firearms. He says it should also comply with the United Nations Program of Action to prevent, combat, and eradicate small arms and live weapons. No one seems to know how many people in South Sudan own illegal guns. But Fataki says, according to research conducted in 2007, it was estimated that there were between 1.9 to 3.9 million small arms circulating in South Sudan, and two-thirds of those weapons were outside of government control or in the hands of civilians. Some observers believe that number could now be much higher due to the ongoing conflict. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
And still to do with issues of weapons, many women who fought in long civil war that ultimately led to the creation of an independent South Sudan in 2013, some of the women veterans set up a foundation called Katiba Banat, which means Girls Battalion in Arabic. The foundation advocates for rights of women and is calling on the government to give women the recognition they deserve. But as Philip Thorne Aleu reports for VOA from Juba, members of Katiba Banat have internal challenges to overcome before they achieve their goals.
Brigadier General Nyankira Atim was at a training camp in Ethiopia for Southern Sudanese Army recruits in 1985 when the founder of the Sudan's People Liberation Movement, John Greng, gave women recruits the name Katiba Banat. Nyankir remembers the task assigned to her and other women who fought for the Southern Sudanese cause.
When they are bringing our wounded heroes, we will take care of them. We have our brother, which are trained a nurse, and we were not trained nurse. But we try our level to help them. We wash them, we nurse them, and we clean their places, cooking for them, do everything for them. We've been taking our mission to front line. We did that.
Nyankir says, when South Sudan became an independent nation in 2011, she decided to revive her battalion's legacy. 2 years later, in 2013, she set up the Katiba Banat Foundation.
I formed the foundation because I not our name to be what? Yeah. To be forgotten. I myself, I love the name of Katiba Banat, even all of us. And he said our name lost. That's why I say, okay, let me form Katiba Banat Foundation.
Second Lieutenant Abai Helen says one of the goals of the Katiba Banat Foundation is to give financial support and moral support to women veterans who fought for freedom for South Sudan.
It will engage also more female soldiers who will come or who are now joining us, like the new female soldiers who have been trained. They will also be part and they are going to be beneficiaries in this foundation of Katiba Banat.
Abai says that While no women soldiers have reported any serious issues, she suspects that they may be suffering in silence in the army. She says the Katipa Barnard Foundation is there to help women soldiers who may have no one else to turn to. But the foundation depends largely on contributions from individuals and is facing a serious financial shortfall. Deborah Ajor, a national MP from Unity State and the Secretary of Finance for Katipa Barnard, says there is a lack of accountability among those who hold the force string in the foundation. For example, Ajor says several ministers donated funds to the foundation during the recent celebrations of South Sudan's post-anniversary of independence. But she says the foundation coordinator, Aguili Chut, has not accounted for all of the money. Chut called a meeting for today at which he planned to update other foundation officials on the Independence Day pledges from ministers and other financial matters. But Ajor says foundation members have been asked not to go to the meeting.
We need her to bring the report. If not, we need her to stop from calling those people. And that is why we said anybody will give her this card for invitation for tomorrow. We as Secretary Barnard, we are not responsible for this occasion.
Chut says she is not trying to swindle the foundation, but she is working hard to ensure the group's prosperity. Chut notes that she works with Nyankir to set up Katipa Barnard in 2013. Chut says she got involved with the foundation to keep the legacy of South Sudan's women freedom fighters alive.
In 2010, before the independence, because I came back from Australia and I talked to my colleague and I said, look, now where is Katipa Barnard anyway? Because Katipa Barnard seemed like disappearing, but the history should not disappear.
Chut says the group is just beginning to get really active this year, and she has so far organized 4 events. Among them was participation in the Independence Day parade by Katipa Barnard members and a group prayer for peace at Juba's Dr. John Gereng Memorial Ground. Both Chut and Nyankir were women veterans of the War of Liberation to have their proper place in historical records for South Sudan. They are also advocating for the current quota that requires 25% of public offices to be held by women to be increased. But they acknowledge that they must learn to work together if they are to have a chance of achieving their common goals. For VOA News, I am Philip Tonaleo in Juba.
The Washington, D.C.-based Enough Project wants to put an end to people profiting from Africa's most violent conflicts. The nonprofit has launched a new initiative called Sentry, which will work to eliminate violent conflicts by stopping companies and individuals that make money off them. South Sudan in Focus reporter Ayen Bior has the story for VOA from Washington.
Africa loses a whopping $50 billion or more each year to illicit economies, according to the United Nations Economic Commission on Africa. The commission says that number actually exceeds the amount Africa receives in development funds by about $4 billion. Akshaya Kumar, a policy analyst at the Enough Project, says part of the work of the Sentry initiative is to trace the complicated web of money that fuels conflicts like the one in South Sudan.
A lot of effort has already gone into trying to mediate peace between President Kiir and those aligned to him and former Vice President Riek Machar. But until now, there hasn't been a really detailed financial investigation into those who are funding and fueling this war.
Kumar says policymakers around the world typically lack credible research and evidence to make their case against those who make their livelihood off the pain and suffering of people caught up in violent conflicts.
Our hope is that with this initiative, policymakers and those who are working on the peace process will be better equipped to construct the leverage that's really necessary to fight the continued intransigence of both warring parties in South Sudan, and also that they'll be able to tackle the enablers and the financiers who are enabling both sides to continue fighting on.
Under this new initiative, Kumar says even those who made illegal gains off conflicts in the past, including those in southern Sudan, will be investigated.
Well, what the Sentry seeks to do is the really detailed investigative work to identify where people have hidden their stolen assets, to identify how the different warring sides are buying their weapons, to look into how so many billions of dollars were stolen from South Sudan and even before then from Southern Sudan following the signing of the CPA until today.
Kumar says the sentry will then take all that information, package it, and use laws already on the books to expose money launderers, wildlife poachers, and other criminals to authorities. She says the sentry has specific action plans to navigate through the complex web of illicit war economies to track down the bad guys.
One thing would be identifying new higher value targets for asset freezes and travel bans, but also using kleptocracy, asset recovery and return authorities that different countries around the world have, including the United States, to identify, freeze and seize the assets which individuals have got through corruption and have stashed away in foreign jurisdictions.
The Sentry's new report points to figures from 2014 indicating the projected oil revenue for South Sudan that year was roughly 12.8 billion South Sudanese pounds, or about $4.3 billion. That nearly equals the funds allegedly stolen in 2012.
We are letting the money basically determine and dictate our investigations. So we're following the money, whether it's the proceeds and the ill-gotten gains of corruption or the money that is being used to buy weapons. But really, we're letting the facts tell us who we should be focusing on.
Kumar says those facts may lead to higher-level politicians involved in the corruption, as well as banks who enable the corrupt businesses to take place.
We definitely embrace and acknowledge that the web is international, and that's why we have multilingual investigators. We are looking at all the nodes in this network, not just within South Sudan or the region, but more broadly, including connections to American jurisdiction that would give U.S. prosecutors the authority to take action on their own.
Kumar says the global nature of such networks will be an asset to the Enough Project's efforts to dismantle transnational crime. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Kenya's top diplomat is calling President Obama's visit an achievement. Find out why when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what's one thing do you like best about yourself?
Wow.
The best thing I like in myself is that when I believe in what I'm doing, nobody can change it. And when I say this is where I'm heading to, nobody can change it. If I already made up my mind that this is it, so that is it. Nobody can change what I have in my mind.
I love smiling. It hides everything. You can never tell when I'm sad. You can never tell when I'm happy. So I smile a lot to bring out the best in me.
I'm a pencil artist. I can draw. I grew up doing that in primary school, and I perfected doing that. So I can draw you. And I can also, I like music, so I play guitar.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Amnesty International warns in a new report that Burundi is on the verge of conflict after police use heavy-handed tactics to suppress months of anti-government demonstrations that have rocked the country. For VOA News, Mohammed Yusuf has more from Bujumbura.
The report, Braving Bullets, says authorities repressed demonstrations as if they were an insurrection, punishing protesters for expressing their political views. Amnesty's Deputy Regional Director, Sarah Jackson, says the police response has inflamed tensions.
They use lethal, excessive force in responding to demonstrations, which then in turn became increasingly violent. And it showed that this was counterproductive, that instead of de-escalating the protest, this actually led to that intensification.
The UN monitors have documented cases of torture and ill-treatment of protesters in detention, as well as dozens of killings of demonstrators and human rights defenders by members of the Imbonerakure militia group and security forces. In the past 3 months, more than 100 people have been killed and more than 170,000 have fled to neighboring countries since President Pierre Nkurunziza announced his bid to run for a controversial third term. Burundi also has experienced a failed coup. Between May and June, Amnesty International's investigators documented police using excessive force against protesters, including women and children, to silence those opposed to Mr. Nkurunziza's presidential bid. Jackson notes some protesters were killed while fleeing.
The police shot unarmed demonstrators even as they were running away from them, when they posed no threat to the police or others. And even when children were present during demonstrations, the police still failed to exercise restraint. They used tear gas, they used live ammunition.
Amnesty did say some protesters used violence in response to the attacks by police. The organization is calling on the Burundian government to take action against those officers accused of attacking protesters. Mr. Nkurunziza is certain to win this past Tuesday's election after running unopposed. His critics say a third term will be unconstitutional. The president and his supporters argued that a third term is permitted because he was elected by parliament, not voters, for his first five-year term in 2005. Burundi's constitutional court has sided with the president. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Bujumbura.
Kenya's foreign secretary says the upcoming visit of U.S. President Barack Obama is a strong endorsement for the country and hopes it will lead to greater investment. Gabe Joslow has highlights from the secretary's interview with VOA.
In an interview with VOA's Vincent McCorry in Nairobi Thursday, Cabinet Secretary Amina Mohamed said President Obama's visit with the government shines a positive light on Kenya and the administration of President Uhuru Kenyatta.
I think it's his coming now is just recognition of the kind of leadership that we have, a pragmatic, energetic, passionate, driven leadership, but also a recognition of what Kenya has been able to achieve in the last few years.
Kenya's relations with the United States have been strained at times, especially when President Kenyatta and his deputy William Ruto were facing charges at the International Criminal Court for their alleged roles in violence that followed the 2007 presidential election. But now, the tensions appear to be in the past. Mr. Obama is expected to arrive in Kenya on Friday to co-host with Kenya a global entrepreneurship summit. With business leaders from around the world coming in for the meeting, Mohamed says she hopes to see some new investments in Kenya.
Everything is on the table. We are hoping, again, that a lot of investment will flow in. We are taking center stage because the U.S. president is coming. I think everybody is interested in knowing what is in this country that is being visited and what can this country offer.
Aside from trade, another major issue on the agenda during Mr. Obama's visit is the state of security. Kenya, which shares a border with Somalia, has been repeatedly targeted by the Somali-based militant group Al-Shabaab. Mohamed said the U.S. has remained a strong partner to Kenya in the fight against terrorism.
Our collaboration, especially on security, is historic. It's been there. Of course, we've enhanced it a lot in the last few years because of the threat, the global threat, actually, that we all face. You know, insecurity is not unique to this part of the world.
Kenya has also played a role mediating regional crises, including the dispute in Burundi over the president's controversial bid for a third term in office. Burundi is still counting the votes from the presidential election held Tuesday, and Mohamed said regional leaders are still considering whether or not to accept the results.
There is talk about not recognizing the election results. We're consulting. We're consulting with the African Union. We're consulting with the East African community to see what the way forward is, and to get ourselves out of the fog.
Mohamed also said she is hopeful for a resolution soon to the crisis in South Sudan, where a political dispute between two rival leaders sparked a civil war that has left thousands dead and has displaced more than 2 million others. Gabe Joslow, VOA News, Nairobi.
Yeah. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of some of today's news with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. The mediation team dubbed IGAD Plus finished working on a compromise peace agreement for South Sudan. The draft agreement will be handed over tomorrow in Addis Ababa to government and rebel negotiators, as well as representatives of a group of former political detainees. Details have not been released, but U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan, Donald Booth, says the agreement focuses on how a transitional government would operate in South Sudan. Ambassador Booth told VOA reporter Eskinder Farooq that IGAD Plus is determined to have the warring party sign the deal by its deadline of August 17th. Civil society activists say a small arms control bill under consideration in Parliament now needs to be modified. At a workshop today organized by the South Sudan Action Network on Small Arms in Juba, a member of the South Sudan Law Society said the bill would fail to restrict the number of firearms a civilian can legally own. Retired Brigadier General Christo Simon Fitaki, who is acting Director General of the Bureau for Community Security and Small Arms Control, says activists want lawmakers to include a provision that was removed from the original draft, which would regulate all firearms used by citizens as well as organized forces. And finally, some women military veterans are calling on the government to recognize their service to the nation. In 2013, the women set up a foundation called Katiba Banat, which means Girls Battalion in Arabic. The foundation advocates for the rights of women, particularly those who currently serve in the military. It also helps elderly women veterans and is calling on the government to give women fighters the recognition they deserve. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, Carol. And that's the end of our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Hasada Mako by Isaka Number 1. Isaka Number 1. Ita asuaka, kumon maarufu yere de ita. We have been listening to Isaka number one with that song, Hasada Maako. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.